Hi, my name is Rachel Beck, and you're listening to Cut to the Chase.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Cut to the Chase. This is your host, Gregory Proctor. We will be featuring today, episode 41, Finding Your Way. And so typically, as everyone knows, I try and find a very interesting quote that resonates with kind of what we're going to be talking about today, along with, you know, how it ties back into our featured guest. So today's quote basically says, "Try not to resist the change that comes your way. Instead, let life live through you. And don't worry that life is turning upside down. How do you know that the side you're used to be on is better than the one you've come from?" So it's rather interesting because I just posted that out there on LinkedIn probably about 15 minutes before, and there's quite a lot of comments on, "Hey, Greg, you've got a lot of interesting things to say nowadays." And so it's rather interesting because after I reached out to our special guest and we started looking into her backstory, I found that there was so many things that were very intriguing to me, so many interesting points that I want to be able to share with our listeners. And so I'm going to jump right in and talk a little bit about our featured guest. So as we look into our featured guest, we find that she's a retired international award-winning photographer. She's also run a photography business in the Midwest United States for approximately 8 years. Through the lens of her camera, she developed a unique perspective and now weaves her vision into words. She's retired from photography, and basically what we also found out is she was born in India, grew up in a Jewish adopted family here in the U.S., and she writes under the penmanship of V. Lasham. I know I didn't get that right. So she's got one forthcoming book, which is Find Your Way. And she has another book that's on the new horizon, which hopefully we'll be able to talk with her about today. And so she grew up in a remote village in India and was later adopted by a Caucasian Jewish family here in America. With the vulnerability, humor, and insight, she describes the emotional surroundings and all sides of adoption, her intense encounter with racism, and her 20-year battle with endometriosis combined with the infertility and loss of motherhood resonates through her book. She also holds a BA in general studies with a minor in psychology, general studies from Missouri Western State University. Overall, to our listeners, Rachel is standing today learning to find forgiveness through all, providing inspiration not only as a speaker, as a writer, on all issues which relate to the core of humanity. She is eternal, that is one goal she holds near and dear to her heart, that her triumph story will inspire, help, and reach out to as many people as she can possibly reach out to before leaving this planet. So Rachel, sometimes my listeners say, "Well, Greg, you know, you do a poor job of introducing me. Do you have any opening remarks?"
Oh, Greg, that was a beautiful introduction. Thank you so much. I think you truly covered it. I was adopted at 11 months old, mm-hmm. By my family in America. You really encapsulated a huge part of my journey. Mm-hmm. A huge part. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So let's jump into kind of our program here. Let's kind of cut to the chase. So you were adopted at the age of 11 months old. And so at what point in your life did you discover that you were adopted? Was that an early adolescent age or was that later on in life?
I was about 3 years old or younger because, you know, my parents are white and I'm brown. So I think it was a very innocent question that I asked, like, "Why are you white and I'm brown?" Uh-huh. And so, you know, my mom sat me down and explained my story, uh-huh. Uh-huh. Of where I came from, because they have two biological children. And they decide that there's children in the world who need homes. So they opted with adoption on their third child. So I'm very grateful.
Well, we're certainly blessed to have you on board and to be able to share some of this experience with us. So there's always been a curiosity for me when it comes to situations very similar to yours. And I guess I'm going to kind of segue just a little bit and kind of talk about my situation. I've always been intrigued about where I came from because of the simple fact that I know that my roots and my heritage was not originated from America. And so the struggle that I've had in trying to go back overseas and find all of the interesting aspects of, you know, my heritage, my cultural, my tribe, whatever that may be, has just been a real challenge. And so my question to you is, seeing that you grew up, or excuse me, you were born in a remote village in India, have you aspired to try to trace those roots back and get a better understanding of where you come from? Is that something that burns as a desire for you to really figure out who your family are?
Oh, it's a huge desire for me. I've been working on it for many years, and I travel back to India and I search. So when I was 16, my parents gave me 2 adoption books. And in there was every letter that went back and forth with India because it was pre, obviously, email. So they saved everything. And I used those letters to unlock other pieces. And when I'm in India and I meet people who knew me when I was there, which is pretty amazing because I'm going to be 45 this year. I search. I absolutely am searching. My biological mom died 2 days after giving birth. Something you think was my biological father took care of me for 5 months and then dropped me off to the founder of the orphanage who took me in. I search while I'm there, and I'm still searching. And it is deep, deep in my core that I won't give up searching.
Yeah.
It's really important to me.
Yeah, I can't agree with you more. It's I think that was one of the things that kind of resonated to me out of all of this. I typically try and find unique things that really not only add value to what our program is all about, but things that really kind of connect back to the audience. And, you know, a part of me is that fulfillment. You know, it goes back to what the title of our podcast is finding your own way. You know, understanding that we ended up here and how we ended up here is always been the mysterious question. But yet, when you try to go back and figure out, well, how did that originate? That's where, for me, I found that, you know, it's almost, for lack of better terms, it's been a crapshoot because, you know, a lot of people say, well, you've got Nigerian, you've got this, you've got that, but trying to narrow it down is just, it's just too much. There's so much information. And unfortunately, like you said, there was no computers or internet or any of those great technological things that we have today. So it makes it fun.
it's not easy. I met one person in like 2015. I was at an event in India, and he claimed that he knew my biological father, right? And there's only 3 people in the world who know his name. I do have his name. And he said the man's name, right?
Yep.
I'm always, you have to be like very cautious, right? I have to protect my heart. Searching for your roots as an adoptee is a very deeply emotional process. So I went to the town where he says he was last seen, and I had some friends who were going like door to door. Someone strongly suggested that I do a video and ask for help, and that might be the way to find him.
Right.
There's a chance he's still alive because of my age, and I know how old he was when he had me. He was a teenager.
Okay.
So it's very possible he's still alive. Now, it's a very, very remote area in India. I have no idea if he has, you know, internet, what state, you know, what financial situation that he's in. But I don't give hope. I don't give up hope, Gregory. I really don't. And everyone's like, just do a video, ask for help. Let's see if we can find him. I did do, which was huge for me, about 2 years ago, I did 23andMe. I wanted to know exactly what my ancestry was. And it came back like 99.9%, close to 100% South India. So that was a big thing for me. To know, okay, I'm 100% Indian. And I connected with relatives who are about 8 steps out on DNA. And so they've tried to try, you know, figuring out, okay, well, we did have family that went to this area. I do believe in my heart one day, Gregory, that I'm going to find him. I'm hoping that's what happens.
Well, certainly we'll definitely keep our thoughts and prayers out for you to fulfill that. I know that it's a very emotional and trying circumstance to have to go through that ordeal and at least trying to connect the dots. And our heart goes out to you. So let's kind of jump back into a little bit of our timeline here. So, you know, you were at the age of 16. And you were doing all of this research because of the letters and the information that your parents had provided to you, your adopted parents. And so you were also in high school. And so my question to you at this moment would be, like, while you were in high school, as you were planning to go off to college, what became the motivating passion behind photography?
That's an interesting story. I got the books about the adoption at 16. I really started searching my roots before I took my first trip to India to really understand more. I just wanted to do that. And that was like a couple years back. In 2013 was my first trip back to India. Photography actually saved my life in many ways. I had lost a child, you know, was pregnant, lost a child through miscarriage. I also had a failed adoption where I met a baby girl, and it all fell apart in 24 hours. So I was having a discussion with a cousin of mine because I was having a hard time. It's a lot of loss. Sure. And he said to me, "Rachel, what lights you up? What makes you truly happy?" And I said, "I love doing photography." And he said, "Then why aren't you doing it for business full time?" And like within 2 days, I started my business. I ran it for 10 years. And photography ended up saving me. It was through the art. I was able to express the emotions that I was dealing with. There was a lot of grief. And then I took my photography and was able to use it to help many organizations because I did a lot of volunteer photography with groups like the Humane Society, American Diabetes Association. I volunteered with the military. So it became a passion of being able to help people and open their eyes to truly what's going on in the world. I've seen things that I can't unsee. I've taken photos of things I can't unsee. But it's necessary for people to see it. I also exhibited my art all over the U.S. So it's important to me that my work has meaning. It has to have meaning for me in my life. So I figured out how to do that through the photography.
Well, that's certainly commendable. I mean, it sounds like it became very therapeutic for you to kind of channel that energy into something that provided you with a sense of fulfillment and gratitude, despite all of the other emotional things that were going on in your life. Which, you know, I haven't gone out to your website, but I've been itching at that because my oldest daughter is also in photography, and she has a little media company, And I've always tried to tie her in with people that have been there and gone through the triumphs of getting their photography work, publicized and published out to the masses. And so certainly I appreciate you sharing that with us. So
I'd be happy to talk to her too. There's a lot of things to know about. You know, you have to, this is what I learned. So, and I learned this, I think it was in one of the workshops I took, because I was constantly learning. And this man stood up in the photography workshop and said the number one reason why photography businesses fail is because people forget the business aspect of it. And that's really important, right? So I had a license to do photography in the state I was working. There's many things I could talk to your daughter about. I'd be happy to.
Sure. I will definitely make sure I get her tuned in to you, as well as to be able to read your story, because I think your story is also very, very impactful. So let's kind of go through the timeline. You've done the photography, you've spent many years, and you've had a lot of great successes. So now you're in the frame of mind, I don't know if we call it the ton of brick effect, where you decide that it's time for you to transition into writing a book. Can you walk us through that?
Sure, absolutely can. So I went back in 2017 to finish my college degree. And I did it like full time. I had 1 year, finished it. And a friend, I had graduated, and like 4 days later, a friend had said, who had been in India when I was there, knows me really, really well. And she said, "Rachel, your story is very different. It's extremely different, and you need to share it with the world." And I said, "What are you talking about?" And she said, "You need to write a book." And she planted that seed. And I just got out of school, it was burnt, full semester, really hard classes. And she said, "Just sit down at the computer and see what happens." I turned it on, and the first day I started writing like 5 hours a day. And it was like, and it was like that till I finished the book. I hired an amazing publisher, and she was an editor too. Uh-huh. It was my friend who planted the seed. She saw something in me that I didn't see. But she said, "I know you, and I know you well enough, and I've been with you in India. I know that story's in there. You just have to let it out." It was very powerful.
Yeah. Well, I know my wife made me promise not to say this while we're on the podcast, but my wife has purchased your book, and I know she's waiting to actually read it. So I'm sure I'll get an opportunity to read it whenever she's done. But certainly, from the memoirs that we read, it's very inspiring. And certainly, like I said, our heart definitely goes out to you. So let's talk a little bit about, which I didn't say in the opening remarks, because, as we find our way, sometimes where things occur in life. And in your case, you had a lot of things happen in life, pretty much from an adolescent perspective, from a very youthful perspective. But now you have this voice, you have this energy, you have this need to share your vision with the world. And I must say, which I didn't say in the intro, you also have a podcast, which is, my hats go off to all of the podcasters that I actually get an opportunity to interview on this show. Walk us through kind of what your podcast is all about.
And please tell your wife thank you, and I hope you guys enjoy the book. So my video podcast and show came out, I started doing it in March. Mm-hmm. And when everything really started heating up with the pandemic, I wanted to lift up people in my network. Mm-hmm. I wanted to introduce them to people in my network. And so that's how it started. And I said, "Look, I know the people in my network. I know how their stories. I build the friendships like you and I met on, mm-hmm. In our network." Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I wanted for people to hear these stories so they don't lose hope during the pandemic.
Right.
That is a huge reason why I'm doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I tell you, it's kind of along the same lines of the platform that I've developed with Cut to the Chase, is to bring forth friends, family, and professional colleagues to talk about things that impact our ability to thrive. I think it's so important with the way society and cultural and, you know, just everything that's going on in the media stream right now is that we have a way to connect with ourselves. We can't be sheltered in our homes without having some human intervention or ways to be able to engage with others. And at least for me, what I've been able to do is my creativity through this pandemic has gone from, I don't know what scale it was at, but I think it's well over 1,000% now because of all the ideas that I have going on daily and the amount of work that my team has been telling me. We have more work going on today than we had when you were on the road. And so I don't know if your experience is the same way, but certainly my ideas and creativity seem to flow more in this current pandemic that we're in, because it's just, you know, I don't want to see us still be in the same position we were when we come out of it. So what are your thoughts about that?
Really, it's lifting people up. It's giving them hope. It is, people are lost. Mm-hmm. People are hurting. And if I can make a person smile or light up their heart through the interviews that I'm doing, and it gives them hope for one more day to hang in there, then I know I achieved my goal. I'm always, Gregory, it's people first.
Sure, absolutely.
If you and I, you know, we come back in a year and we go, okay, we've been in this pandemic, you know, for another year. It's been since March. We have no idea how long it's going to go on. Mm-hmm. And we know we did our part.
That's
to
right.
To help humanity right now through mm-hmm. this pandemic. Mm-hmm. Then I know we did the right thing.
Absolutely.
I live a we mentality.
Yeah, absolutely. So you have a second book on the horizon. Are you able to share with our listeners kind of the approach that you're taking with your second book, unlike your first?
Okay, so I'm writing the second book. I'm about 100, about I think it's like 95 pages into it. It's the only thing that's extremely different for me is when I wrote the first book, I was so nervous about grammar, right? Mm-hmm. Really focused on grammar. And then I hired the publisher, and who's an editor, and she said, you know, mail me chapters, I'll edit them. So writing the second book, I let go of all that because I know I have an editor. Right. And so it's almost like a free flow thought. Mm-hmm. Is easier for me right now without thinking about, you know, I'm going to have to get a publisher, I'm going to have to get this. For me, the hardest part about my book was finding the right publisher.
Right.
That was a huge process. I had to connect. It's a deeply personal relationship with your publisher. You have to be symbiotic. I need to work with somebody who's a good communicator. Mm-hmm. So now I can just write... And right. But what I'm focused on right now, honestly, is working on the podcast and helping people through this pandemic.
Sure. Sure. Well, we definitely share that common goal as being both podcasters. And, you know, we can't get enough of us out there to ensure, like you said, you know, we're doing the right things for humanity. So, Rachel, we're going to be approaching here in the next minute or so, almost our time. So do you have any closing or final remarks or takeaways that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Sure. Right now, what people need is love, kindness, and empathy, because they're truly, truly hurting. Mm-hmm. So if your audience is sending love out into the world, that is what's needed now more than ever.
Right. Right. Very well stated. Very well stated. We certainly appreciate that. And I have one other quote that I pulled together for this particular podcast, which kind of resonates as well. Never assume that you're stuck with the way things are right now. You aren't life change. Or excuse me, you are not. Life changes every single moment, every single day, so can you. And certainly, Rachel, we appreciate having you on the show. We appreciate you sharing some insight with regards to your growth and the things that you've encountered. We look forward to definitely reading the first book as well as the second book. When is that due to be released, your second book?
I'm still writing it, but I'll keep you updated.
Okay. All right. Sounds great. Well, listen, this has been wonderful. And hey, I'm all up for being a guest on your podcast as well. So
I would love that. I will absolutely send you a message today.
All right. Well, that sounds great.
And
well,
thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We're delighted to have you on board. And to our listeners, again, please be safe out there. God bless everyone. Take care. This has been episode 41, Finding Your Own Way. Rachel, thank you again. Everyone, bye-bye. Take care.